70 is 75.
And therefore, you know, penalties are just the first step in achieving that. And so we're going to present what we've done from our perspective as just one of the tools that can achieve reform ultimately in this sector. But of course, there are other remedies and other approaches that one would have to consider and one would have to put in place in terms of policy and also monitoring mechanisms to ensure that this doesn't happen again. But this morning, all that we present now is where we are in terms of what we achieved in terms of A, uncovering the conduct, and B, penalizing it. So on that note, I'm going to hand over to Mr. Hobushe to then take us through how we went about this investigation.
Okay, thank you very much, the Deputy Commissioner, Mr. Rosley, and myself, we decided that we're going to share the presentation. He is going to cover the outcome of the investigation part, and then now going to be covering the advocacy interventions that the Commission has undertaken. Thanks. Over to you.
Okay, thanks, sir. Good morning, Madam Chair and everyone else. Firstly, I must say it's an honor to be here and to present before the committee. I think before I get to actually the outcomes of the construction fast-track investigation of the Competition Commission, I think it's appropriate for me just to paint a little background into how we actually initiated this particular investigation. Firstly, the construction industry is one of the priority areas for the Commission. In terms of, in particular, investigating what we call cartel conduct. I'll explain a little bit more about what cartel conduct is in a minute. So what actually prompted the Commission to initiate the project was that the Commission was already in the process of investigating several other matters in this industry, and there were a number of complaints were coming through in this industry, in particular from municipalities around the escalating costs relating to the World Cup stadium. And then the Commission also leveraged a lot of information that was coming through its corporate leniency policy, and in particular one firm came through the Commission in around the late 2009, and they actually provided the Commission with a lot of information around bid rigging in the construction sector. And that's actually what prompted the Commission to start looking at collusion in the construction sector, and the Commission came to the conclusion that collusion in the construction sector was widespread. I just want to get back to cartel conduct and maybe very briefly explain in terms of the Act what cartel conduct is. It's actually penalized in terms of Section 41B of the Act, which basically says very simply that an agreement between firms in the same line of business that has the following effects. One is price fixing, number two is market allocation, and number three is collusive tendering. And in this project over here, in the first fact, we find that one of the conducts that we investigated was collusive tendering, or commonly known as bid rigging. Now, I just want to explain very quickly the background to give the context into what exactly do we mean by collusive tendering in the fast-track construction investigation. Now, we find that firms that were bidding for tenders, be it public sector tenders or private sector tenders, what they would do is that they would exchange information with other tenders. Now, the Act clearly punishes participants for exchanging information, especially around the tendering process, because a competitive process is where parties actually bid independently. Now, in this particular project, what they would do is they would actually exchange what we call cover prices. So if firm A and firm B is winning a tender, you would find, for example, if firm B does not want to win the tender, they would collude with firm A and say, we will put in a cover bid which is not competitive, which is uncompetitive, and that bid for most times would be an inflated bid. And you'd find that firm A would put in a bid and firm A would actually win the bid. So in other words, the firms would actually predetermine who is going to win the bid. And most times you'd find that they would inflate those prices when putting those bids. So that's the one way that we call it cover pricing. And another way is that you find that firm A will compensate firm B for putting in a cover bid. So in the bid itself, the bid price, they will include a compensation payment in the bid price as well. So that I think in a kind of nutshell is what we refer to as bid rigging and collusive tendering. So the commission was seized with all the information, and it decided that because for the purposes of expediting the investigation and realized that there would be multiple contraventions to investigate, that it needed to find a very efficient way in which to investigate it, and it developed a fast track. And he looked at experiences in other parts of the world, in Holland and in the UK, and they have similar problems in the construction sector, and they also utilize what we call a fast-track process, whereby an invitation was sent to industry participants that were involved in collusive conduct to actually come forward and voluntarily settle these contraventions. And that's what the Commission actually did. In February 2010, we launched our invitation to the industry to come forward and voluntarily settle these contraventions. And broadly, the aims of the project, I'll go through it very quickly, was to incentivize firms to come forward. And the economists will tell you that, some of the theory that they apply to incentivize firms is to create what we call the prisoner's dilemma. That in terms of our corporate leniency policy, a firm that comes first through the door and complain about cartel conduct and confesses to cartel conduct and implicate other firms, the firm that comes first will qualify for what we call corporate leniency. In other words, that particular firm won't get a fine, but the other firms that are implicated will be penalized by the Commission. So that's the kind of dilemma that this entire invitation was premised on. And a little later in our presentation, we will talk about the outcomes of that process. So the firms have to be very truthful about the information that they're providing to the Commission. They have to also provide the evidence as well for the contravention. And one of the other advantages of the fast-track process was that the legal cost would be minimized in investigating this project as well. And obviously, the main kind of aim of the Commission was to make sure that we make the industry more competitive and that the industry, starts to become, so that the prices in that industry also come down as well. Okay. So I want to get you very quickly into the applications that came through from the various firms. 21 firms in the construction sector applied for settlement. The Commission had a lot of information that they had to analyze, and when they started to analyze the information, one would find that there were 300 separate contraventions that the Commission had to investigate. And in terms of the Act, the Commission had to separate conduct that was prescribed from conduct that was not prescribed. Now, the Competition Act clearly states that in Section 67, that conduct that is more than 3 years old from the time the Commission initiated a complaint into the sector, that conduct cannot be investigated by the Commission. So the Commission actually initiated a complaint in February 2009 and in September 2009. So one would find that if you look at the 3 year period, it would go back to February 2006 and September 2006. So that's the kind of prescription period in which the Commission was working within. So 21 firms applied. Three firms were not liable to settle because they had been granted leniency. Three firms decided not to settle with the Commission. And those three firms that are not settling, one of them is still in negotiations with the Commission on settlement, and the other two firms will be prosecuted, and their names are in the slide today. So it's NMC, JT Ross Audio is not likely to settle, while Group 5, Construction ID, and Power Construction refused to sell, but Group 5 is still in negotiations with the Commission. So the project, the 300 project is broken down into 160 prescribed projects which the Commission did not investigate, and that the total value of those projects is 9.8 billion, and 140 projects which the Commission actually investigated, and that amounts to 37.3 billion. As I indicated before, the FASTEP process ran concurrently with the corporate leniency process, and as I stated before, is the corporate leniency process was a process to encourage firms to come forward and actually provide the Commission with the information in this project. Now, in addition to firms making applications to settle these contraventions, we also found that, for example, a very practical example, if firm A had disclosed, say, 20 contraventions, we also found that firm B would also implicate firm A in a project, where firm A itself did not disclose that to the Commission. So we were sitting with two categories of projects. One was what we call disclosed projects by the firm, and the other category was of projects that was not disclosed by the firm. So we call that the undisclosed project. And we penalize the firm for both the disclosed and the undisclosed project as well. And in July this year, 17th, 18th of July this year, the investigation has culminated, and we have finalized investigation after just over 2 years of investigating. And the matter went to the tribunal, where we had asked the tribunal to make the consent agreement between the Commission and the firms that were willing to settle an order of the tribunal. So that process culminated in the tribunal in July this year. What I also want to state as well is that we call this the phase one of the project that culminated in July, and the phase two of the project where there are some firms that decided not to settle all projects. There were some contraventions that they had decided not to settle, and for those contraventions, the Commission will go into a phase two where we will prosecute those firms for those contraventions. And then there is a group of firms, 22 firms, that didn't apply for settlement at all. Those are much smaller firms, and in the phase two, the Commission would be prosecuting, investigating and prosecuting those firms, depending on whether they're going to settle those contraventions or not. And very briefly, what we did is we put a slide together just to show the project life cycle. So one could see from February 2011, when the Commission launched its invitation to the firms to settle, right until July 2013, the kind of life cycle of the entire project. And I think on this slide here, I want to also maybe just take about a minute or so just to explain, you know, the kind of investigative process. And you know, on the slide, it looks pretty much like flows quite easily, but I can assure you, having worked on it myself for over 2 years, that it was a very challenging process. We had to deal with 21 firms, 21 different sets of lawyers, 21 different sets of executives, multiple stakeholders, and it was a team of about 12 people from the Commission that worked on this, and I must say the team worked extremely hard on this project for over 2 years. And some of them as well, we didn't even grant them leave in that period because we were trying to finalize this project as quickly as we could. So it was quite a robust process, and in the end we managed to you know, get 15 firms to settle. And in the future slide, I'll explain what are, you know, the way forward from here as well. I think what's important is I think the slide is quite an important slide because it basically is the heart of the FASTEP process. Is, I don't know, a number of people have questions around, you know, how does the Commission actually go about calculating and determining their penalties? And it was you know, a group of people in the Commission, you know, who took a lot of advice from counsel and from international partners. You know, as to how one goes about penalizing firms for these contraventions. And what the Commission did is, because the Commission realized that there would be multiple contraventions for which firms would be punished for, that they decided to break it down into four different categories, from A to D, and the Commission said that they would penalize firms for a basket of contraventions rather than for each contravention separately. So one is five, for example, in Category A, if a firm was involved with 1 to 4 contraventions, that they would be penalized between 1 to 4% of the grouped turnover in a particular CIDB subsector. And there were five CIDB subsectors, but the three main subsectors were civil engineering, general building, and mechanical engineering. So if you are involved in, for example, any, say, 14 contraventions, then you would be in Category C, and in Category C, the penalty would be between 7 to 10%. And in addition to taking the sliding scale into account, there are numerous factors that the Commission took into account in determining, you know, the discretion within the range of penalties. And amongst the factors that the Commission took into account is, firstly, is the number of contraventions in a subsector. They took into account the value of the project. They took into account whether the firm actually won or lost the project. They took into account whether the firm had settled any claims for civil damages, took the annual turnover in a particular subsector into account. And then in the Act itself, there are numerous factors that are listed in Section 59 of the Act, and the Commission took those factors into account. And those factors lead to, amongst others, is whether the firm cooperated, whether they were involved with repeated offences. They took into account the nature and extent of the contravention, the market circumstances, and the behaviour of the firm in that particular market. I think at this stage I will give my colleague Inzi an opportunity just to talk about some of our engagements with our stakeholders.
Thanks, Oliver. Madam Chair, I mean, the Competition Commission having, I mean, uncovered this anti-competitive conduct, it was then able in that process to identify who are the state-owned companies as well as government departments that have been affected. And therefore, took a decision to engage with them with a specific purpose of communicating basically how they have been affected by this collusive tendering, as also with objective of indicating, I mean, that I mean, in terms of the Act, I mean, they have the right, I mean, to institute civil damages against the firm. Now, in that regard, then, Madam Chair, I mean, we engaged with the Department of Transport, Water Affairs, SAGA, Public Works, CIGB, Sandral, ESCOM, your Transnet, the Cape Town Municipality, Nelson Mandela Bay, Etekwini, Polokwane Municipality as well. And then over and above that, Madam Chair, we did also engage, I mean, the broader stakeholders of the Commission, I mean, the Ministry, of course, I mean, of Economic Development, BUSA, the Black Business Council, as well as the Black Search. So like I indicated, Madam Chair, I mean, the objective there was to you know, communicate to them what the Commission basically was able to uncover. The project, Madam Chair, that was initially disclosed by Avenge, with regards to the construction of a Kimberley prison to the Commission. The Commission refused, I mean, the conditional immunity to Avenge with regards to this specific project, precisely because, I mean, the Commission was not able to find sufficient evidence that Avenge actually had reached this particular project with regards to Kimberley prison. There were also, Madam Chair, other projects that affected public works, but those projects, Madam Chair, were prescribed projects. One of those is the Engobo Road project, which took place in 2003, and then the other one was a building project which took place in Ijujwa in 2002. And therefore, precisely because then, Madam Chair, I mean, these projects were prescribed, meaning therefore that they did not fall within the ambit of investigation by the Commission under the construction fast track process, they were not investigated. I'll again hand over to my colleague, Mr. Josie, at this point. Thanks.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll just speak to one of the interesting, I think, or important way forward in the fast track process.
Sorry, Madam Chair, we don't have this documentation because talk about in mobile and but we don't have it.
I think you were talking on arrange, expatiating on arrange, were you? They don't have that document. But you should, but you should have placed, the information that you are putting to members on paper. And just to speak out of cuff, because we need to make a follow-up on some of the issues. That's the question that they are raising right now.
I think the concern here is that there are some pages missing on these documents. The concern is
we worked on an earlier version. The majority of the slides are on, that are being projected are not in our hard copy. Secondly, just to clarify, I'm not sure that I do turn in mobile, the building and the road was an event matter or some other company, but obviously prescribed. They're all Fiona. Okay, so it can be prison and better. Okay.
Minister, we apologize for that, for the missing bits. We apologize.
Okay, thanks. Deputy Minister, you know that Honorable Gaines is from Eastern Cape, so he wants that information on paper. So can you provide her on secretary with that information after the meeting?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much.
Okay, once again, we apologize.
Okay. Madam Chair, just to continue, I think one of the important way forward is in addition to penalizing the firms in July this year, is that there's an opportunity now for clients of these projects to consider civil damages. And in the Act itself, Section 65 of the Act, there's two options. The one option is that the firms could have settled these civil claims before the matter went to the tribunal, and there's an option of them settling or claiming civil damages after the matter went to the tribunal, and none of the firms took up the option of setting civil damages before the matter went to the tribunal. So the option after the tribunal is that once the consent agreement is made an order of the tribunal, what it basically means is that the firm in a consent agreement has now admitted to collusion, is that any client can approach the chairperson of the tribunal and ask for a certificate to that effect and use that certificate in a civil court to claim damages. So that's the option after the matter has gone through the tribunal. Just to maybe sum up, the 15 firms that settled with the Commission, the total fines, they came to 1.47 billion, and when the matter went to the tribunal, or prior to going to the tribunal, just to explain some of the challenges that the Commission had in respect of trying to finalize this process, there were a number of legal challenges, in particular from the firms. The challenges were around prescription and how the Commission had actually interpreted the prescription principle. So that was one of the legal challenges that we faced with. And the Commission was fortunate in the sense that we were on strong legal ground and we managed to win that point in the tribunal. And then the other challenge was around turnover. And a lot of the firms were obviously stating that the Commission must take into account a narrow turnover, or what they call an effective turnover, whilst the Commission was quite clear that we were going to look at the group turnover, which obviously in the end meant that the fines would be much higher than an effective turnover. So that was the other legal challenge that we faced. In the tribunal itself, there was an intervention from SAGA and the Gauteng provincial government. The intervention was based on the public interest, and
and the intervention was also based on the intervention wanted to understand how the commission actually calculated its penalties. The tribunal dismissed that intervention and they continued to make the consent agreement an order of the tribunal. In next slide here, what we got here is very quickly is we basically summarized in this slide and the next slide basically the number of projects that each firm has settled the commission. So this information is taken directly from the consent agreements from the tribunal. You can see each firm how many they agreed to settle disclosed projects and how many non-disclosed projects they agreed to settle, and the penalty amount that they actually pay as well on this slide over here. And suffice to say, I can maybe also point out that, as I said earlier as well, some firms have decided not to settle all projects, and I can maybe name those firms now very quickly. WBHO decided not to settle 4 projects, and these are the 4 projects that the commission will further investigate and prosecute. Murray and Roberts, 1 project. Basil Reed decided not to settle 4 projects. Roberts, 2 projects. And this slide as well is a continuation of the previous slide. They talked about the balance of the 15 funds. These are the number of projects that these funds have settled. And these are the fines in the last column. And as I said earlier on, 3 other firms that didn't settle at all were Group 5, 4 projects, Power Construction, 1 project, and Construction IE, or 1 project. So those are the other 3 firms that didn't settle. And then on the last slide, I'll give my colleague Imzia an opportunity again to present the last slide.
Okay, thanks. The Commission, Madam Chair, also then took a decision to complement, this enforcement work that is being done by intervening now from an advocacy point of view. The question that we needed to ask was, what is it that we can do proactively as the Commission, to deter bid rigging, basically, from happening at the bidding stage. So we intervened then both from an institutional capacity point of view, we intervened from policy point of view, and we intervened also from an awareness point of view, Madam Chair. With regards to then awareness, Madam Chair, we intervened by providing training, whose objective basically, was to raise awareness amongst the procurement officials such that they are able to identify, rigged bids. At the bidding stage, basically, at the evaluation committee stage. So we provided that training, at national, provincial, and municipalities, as well as the state-owned companies, Madam Chair. And that awareness includes specifically, Madam Chair, the National Department of Public Works. With regard to public works, we trained 266 procurement officials from public works, and we did not only then train them at national level, Madam Chair, we trained them throughout the regions nationally. So that on our part was a recognition of the important role played by the National Department of Public Works with regards to procuring for the state. And then from a policy point of view then, Madam Chair, we drafted and introduced basically a certificate of independent bid determination in public procurement. Now what this is, Madam Chair, it's a declaration basically by bidders that they have not communicated amongst themselves prior to them submitting the bid. And it is a legally, binding document. It was then given effect through effective notice that was issued by the National Treasury on the 21st of July 2010. So as we speak then, Madam Chair, the 3 spheres of government are now using this certificate as part and parcel of what is referred to as standard bid documentation, Madam Chair. What firms basically are requested is that they have to sign this certificate indicating that there was no prior communication amongst themselves before them submitting, I mean, their bids. So this is already have come into effect, Madam Chair. Over and above that, from an institutional capacity point of view, Madam Chair, we then contributed towards a visiting curriculum such that, you know, visiting training is part and parcel of supply chain management training at Palama, Madam Chair.
I hope it's anti-Beverly
trend.
We don't need Beverly
trend. Okay, thanks, basically, I mean, I agree with you. Basically, we want them to be able to identify, you know, this anti-competitive conduct called corrosive tailoring or pitch rigging training. So this then, Madam Chair, went through the whole process. I mean, a team basically was established during the Competition Commission, Palama, as well as the National Treasury, to make sure, I mean, that this curriculum comes into fruition. It was then subsequently validated as the process normally goes by the National Treasury. And then after that process, then this training commenced on the 20th of February this year at Palama. The objective, Madam Chair, was to make sure that this training is sustained, you know, into the future, and such that procurement officials, you know, on an annual basis have, you know, a week in which they are taken through this training through PAM. Thanks.
Thank you. Are you done?
Yes.
Can I allow CIDB just to come in? Honourable Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee, the Deputy Minister and the DG of Public Works, good morning. My name is Linda Ramiakaza and I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the CIDB and also the Chairperson of the Task Team on Collusion, the Board Task Team on Collusion and Construction Cartel that is leading this process within the CIDB. I would just like to introduce the CIDB team that will be engaging with you this morning. We have on my right the acting CEO who will make the presentation on CIDB's responses to the Competition Commission findings. We also have our chairperson of the board, Mr. Bahanandendo, who is known to members of the Portfolio Committee. We also have the unit that is directly responsible for engaging on this issue, the procurement and delivery management unit. Now, I will hand over to the CEO who will make the presentation, and the CEO will primarily emphasize or highlight the CIDB's responses in view of the findings of the Competition Commission, and also articulate the range of sanctions that are available to the CIDB as duly mandated in terms of the Act. And also, she will flag some of the issues and broadly make comments on the implications of the CIDB's envisaged responses. Members, I would like beforehand then to apologize if some of the issues that are raised are not in the presentation that the CEO, acting CEO, will make, but because these are the processes that we're going to be engaging with and issues that we're going to be working with. But then if anything is required, we'll duly forward such information via the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you. Now I would like to hand over to the acting CEO.
Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, Deputy Minister, the DG, apologies for that. Honourable Chairperson, my apologies for that. Okay. In terms of the presentation, I will not necessarily, through your permission, Madam Chairperson, I will not necessarily focus on the outcomes of the Competition Commission investigation, because I think that's been adequately covered by the Competition Commission. Instead, if we go to slide 3 of the presentation, I will focus from bullet 3 of the purpose, which will look at procedural processes to be followed as per the CIDB regulator framework, available sanctions that may be imposed by the CIDB on the firms that are found guilty of collusion, and lastly, CIDB commitment to prevent corruption or collusion, and our progress in terms of our processes to date. Having said that, I would then request that the members go to slide 6 of the presentation. Basically, what's contained on slide 6 of the presentation is what the Competition Commission has covered in terms of it details the 15 companies that have been fined and the fines that are attached to those findings or the conclusion of the Competition Commission processes. What I just want to highlight on that particular slide is the last column, because the last column basically tells us what grading those companies are on the CIDB register of contracts. On the next slide, 7, I also want to mention that out of the 15 companies, in the CIDB register of contractors is we have 37 firms that are registered as 9 general building grade and 92 as 8 general building. Of the 15 firms that have been that have signed consent agreements with the Competition Commission, 10 firms are registered as grade 9 out of the 37, and 3 firms are registered as grade 8 out of 92. Also, on the civil engineering class of works, we have 51 firms that are registered in our register of contractors, and 112 that are registered as 8 civil engineering firms. And what we also found is the fact that in these companies, the 15 companies that have signed consent agreements, these are generally large construction firms, as obviously indicated on the previous slide, that they are mostly on grade 9, which is our maximum grade, and grade 8. And obviously we have some also on 7. They have divisions within their firms that register both as general buildings as well as civil engineering. Now, the Competition Commission has presented their outcome of the process, and the CIDB also attended the tribunal hearing where these orders or consent agreements were finalized by the tribunal. We made some observations during the tribunal processes, and some of the observations that we made is that the issues around anti-competitive practices in the construction industry are widespread, and they range from bogus tenders to other practices such as user fee. The Competition Commission did unpack some of these things. And we also noted, as was presented earlier, that these practices started long ago. We may at this point be focusing only on projects that were done from Feb 2006 up until the Competition Commission finalized its investigation, but they started a long time ago. And some of it has been mentioned in the sense that they have not been fined simply because those had been considered as having been prescribed. The intention also that is very important that this forum notes is that the intention of the Competition Commission processes was not to apply punitive measures, but rather to prevent future collusive practices in the industry through corporate leniency policy and the construction fact check process. And you would have noted from their presentation that they say some of the firms were not liable to settle because they had received immunity through their corporate leniency process, a policy. There was also observation by ourselves that at the tribunal, there seemed to be inadequate information that was provided because of alleged unavailability of relevant personnel due to either retirement or resignation from these companies. And most of the funds that were received by these firms through the collusive practices were recorded in their books as plant hire. Because these questions were asked at the tribunal, that so how did you account for these funds in your financial statements? And most of them had accounted for them as plant hire. Now, we also noted that most, if not all, the firms, they were all saying the same thing and saying the measures that they've put in place to ensure that this does not happen again was the fact that they've introduced in terms of what they had introduced was that they had included training on competition compliant monitoring programs. And some of them had not even instituted disciplinary hearings within their own firms. So it's just some of the observations that I feel was important that we share at this point in time. And also what I just want to mention at this point in time, which is not necessarily on the slide, is that as the CIDB, we appreciate the work that the Competition Commission has done. We appreciate it. Because if this process had not been there, as the CIDB, who is considered a regulator in the industry, we would not have known that this is happening. In fact, the CIDB is tasked with making sure that it serves as a risk management tool for client departments to ensure that such things do not happen. So we do see this as a very dark part of our own history and our own commitment to enforcing and strengthening some of our code. And I will elaborate more in terms of what our code of conduct entails in terms of our own regulations. I won't necessarily focus or go through the international experience, but suffice to say that as the CIDB, we are already doing some desktop studies to just see what other countries have done with such cases when they came to the fore. It's also important to just mention that in 2011, the CIDB, through its construction industry performance unit, we also did a study or research, and we discovered that the firms that are indicated, at least for now, the 15, they account for more than 45% of the total construction of projects in this country. Now, going to the CIDB regulatory framework, because now that the Competition Commission has concluded its processes, the CIDB and any other interested entity obviously can then start their own processes. As the CIDB, we have a code of conduct for all parties that engage in construction procurements. Our code, in terms of Section 29(1) of our Act, it makes provision for the enforcement of the code of conduct, which says that the CIDB may convene and conduct an inquiry into any breach of the code of conduct. Now, these companies or these firms that you're dealing with would have entered, obviously, as the fact that they are registered in the CIDB means they need to abide by the code of conduct of the CIDB. This code, it establishes a broad framework within which action or default by any party to the procurement process may be judged. And any action or default which conflicts with the code is deemed unacceptable and is subject to sanction in terms of the CIDB Act and the regulations. Amongst others, this code dictates that a contractor must not engage in collusive practices that have direct or indirect adverse impact on the cost of the project to the employer. Now, the issues that we are dealing with here are exactly what the code dictates must not happen. Now, there is no question that there has been a clear violation of the code of conduct of the CIDB. That is not questionable. Now, we, having said that, we also need to appreciate and observe the fact that there is a procedural process that the CIDB will then need to engage in to facilitate investigations and system disciplinary hearings. Our regulation in terms of section 28.1 of the CIDB regulations, it states that if the CIDB has any reasonable grounds to suspect that a person has acted contrary or has omitted to act in terms of the code, the CIDB must appoint an investigating officer to investigate the complaint or that suspicion. Now, that same regulation in terms of sub-regulation 2810 also states that if another organ of state other than the CIDB undertakes an investigation and the finding of that organ of state indicates that a person has acted contrary or has omitted to act in terms of the code, that organ of state must provide the CIDB with its findings and all other documents relevant to its investigation. Now, this then answers some of the questions that the CIDB has had in the past where we've been asked, why is the CIDB quiet when everyone else is talking about the Competition Commission process? Now, it's because of this very sub-regulation that we had to observe and await the processes of the Competition Commission as another organ of state to finalize its processes. And now that it has finalized its processes through the tribunal, CIDB is obviously in the process of then acting against it. 28.11 of the same regulation, they state that upon receipt of these findings and documentation contemplated in Section 10, the CIDB must refer the matter to the investigating officer appointed by the CIDB. Now, the CIDB has got the consent agreements that these companies signed with the Competition Commission. And the CIDB is in the process of appointing an investigative officer. Regulation 12 then states that the investigating officer must, within 30 days of the referral by the CIDB, submit a report to the CIDB. That report should contain at least one, a statement on whether, in the opinion of the officer, the person implicated by the investigation of the organ of state has acted contrary or has omitted to act in terms of the code or failed to comply with the provisions of the code and a recommendation regarding the action that the CIDB should take. Now, we should note, it's the officer that will do the investigation and also recommend the action to be taken. I will later on then just mention some of the intricacies and the shortcomings that we found with our own regulations. Now, the same regulation, section 29, subsection 6, states that an investigating committee appointed by the CIDB in terms of sub-regulation 1C must consist of at least two persons who have expertise in the fields relevant to the inquiry, and a person qualified in law who must act as a chairperson of the committee. Now, there's two structures here. It's the investigating officer who will do the investigation and recommend the action that the CIDB should take, and then there's an investigating committee who will serve. If we are to compare, it's something similar to the tribunal in the case of the Competition Commission. The committee must be independent of the CIDB. It must be impartial and unbiased persons who must perform a quasi-judicial function, which includes the powers to hear evidence, make findings, and decide on the appropriate action to be taken. Now, Regulation 29, section, subsection 12, prescribes the rights of the respondents at the formal inquiry. 29.15b also states that if the investigating committee finds the respondent guilty in terms of paragraph A, the investigating committee must inform the respondent of the finding and clearly state the reasons for the finding. Two, it must take cognizance of any aggravating or mitigating circumstances. And thirdly, it must fashion the respondent as contemplated in sub-regulation 18. Now, I mentioned the fact that the officer will recommend action to be taken to the CIDB, and it's the committee that will then make that ruling. Now, I would like to take the committee through the sanctions that can be applied or that may be applied by the CIDB in terms of its CID regulations. There's nine of them. The first one, which is not necessarily applicable in this case, it talks about ordering the removal of the name of a contractor for the register. And I'm saying it's not applicable in this case because it specifically talks about the removal as it relates to transgression of Section 18.1. Now, Section 18.1 simply say, if, for instance, I'll make an example, if we find that contractor A has done work in Department X, and we find that that contractor was actually not registered in the CIDB, we can actually order for the removal of that. So in this case, it's not applicable because these companies are registered with the CIDB, or at least they were when they did these projects, some of them. Two, the CIDB can issue a warning to the respondent, which warning must remain valid for a period not exceeding a year. So that's the sanction that can be applied by the CIDB. Issue a warning, but that warning only valid for 12 months. With CIDB may downgrade the respondent's current contract grading designation in the register by a maximum of 2 grades for a period determined by the investigating committee. Now, if I take an example of a contractor who has been fined by the Competition Commission who is a grade 9, the CIDB can downgrade that contractor by 2 grades for a period that will be determined by the committee. That's just one of the sanctions. Next section, we can impose a fine, but this fine must not exceed 100,000. I'm drawing this directly from the regulations that were passed years ago. The next sanction that may be considered is restricting or prohibiting the respondent from participating in public sector construction works procurement for a period of time, period of which may not exceed 10 years. That's basically to suspend a contractor from doing work with government, but their suspension must not be more than 10 years. Again, it's the committee that will determine the number of years if this sanction is considered. We can order the cancellation of the registration of the respondent and placing a prohibition on the reapplication for registration by the respondent. This is basically deregistration, to deregister the contractor completely from the register of contractors in the CIDB and not allow them ever to register with the CIDB. So that means taking them out completely from doing government work. Making a cost determination that the accused, the CIDB, or the party who initiated the investigation must defray all or part of the costs incurred to the conduct the formal inquiry. Now, it is no question that going through this process is going to have huge legal costs. The other option is we may order a specific performance relevant to the charges that have been brought against the respondent. And the committee, lastly, may consider a combination of the sanction that are preferred to. So they may look at all the sanctions or choose certain sanctions or whatever the case. It's up to the investigating committee that will have to be appointed. Now, going to CID's commitment in terms of dealing with corruption, as we are dealing with our plans for the 2014-15, we are developing and will develop and pilot the requirements for transparency and integrity systems by the end of this year. That's what we plan to do. We also want to develop and submit an anti-corruption model to the board by the end of the financial year. And that model is aimed at reducing fraud and corruption in the industry. We will also investigate the feasibility of identifying a best practice for integrity management systems, which could lead to the development of such a best practice and recognition of such systems for grade 5 to 8 contractors. Now, I need to mention at this point that CIDB considers collusion in the industry unacceptable, and action will be taken through proper processes. And we are preparing ourselves, and I will take the committee through the process and the progress in terms of where we are in dealing with it, and also to make sure that whatever we do, we follow processes to the latter so that we are not questioned at any point in terms of the integrity of the CIDB in how we deal with the matter. Now, we also, through the processes, likewise, the Competition Commission mentioned that we need to look at sanctions that will be commensurate with the damage that has been made. We also need to make sure that we deter such future practices and punish where we need to punish as the CIDB through proper processes as detailed in the legislation. As the CIDB Exco, we've obviously engaged with our board. We started even prior to May, as reflected on the slide. But the prior discussion and engagements were then taken to a special board meeting in May. And in that special board meeting, as the deputy chairperson alluded to earlier, the board resolved to form a task team that will deal with this matter. And that task team is chaired by the deputy chairperson. It was also resolved that we needed to develop the terms of reference for the appointment of an investigative officer and a committee, which had to go for board approval. In June, in a board ex committee, it was also resolved, and this was a recommendation from the task team that had been appointed in May, that declaration of conflict of interest by board members had to be signed. And then in July, at the board meeting, the board approved the appointment of a legal advisor, including a senior counsel. Now, if I just mention on that one, the task team proposed or recommended to the board that given the magnitude of the case that we're dealing with, we need to appoint an advisor that will assist us to make sure that we follow processes to the T. The board also, in end of July, approved the terms of reference for the acquisition of the officer as well as the committee. The legal advisor that includes the senior counsel that was approved by the board in terms of the fact that we can go ahead and recruit and appoint such legal advice to assist the CIDB with the process of establishing appropriate institutional mechanisms and structures that will address all matters related to this cartel within the parameters of our regulatory framework. Why we are saying we need such, it's because I had indicated earlier that looking at the agreements the consent agreements that these firms have signed with the Competition Commission, and looking at our very own legislation, we have identified certain things where we need to be advised on from a legal point of view. Things like prescription period. The Competition Commission mentioned that in their final reports, they have not considered projects that were before February 2006. Now, we need to be sure, as the CIDD, should we be considering some form of prescription or should we go beyond? Competition Commission also mentioned these practices, they from what came to their attention as it was brought forward by the same firm, they were colluding 2002, 2003. Now, where do we start as the CIDB? Because it means our own register of projects was violated since those years, and not just now. Now, how far back do we go? We need legal advice on that. The impact of the corporate leniency policy and its application. Again, the Competition Commission mentioned that there are companies that are not necessarily in the 15 companies because they received immunity, simply because of the nature of the corporate leniency policy that said if you come forward first and you admit your sins, you receive immunity. Now, that what then happens with the issue of the registration and of the registration with the CIDB and the violation of the CIDB code. It does not provide for immunity. Now what do we do with those projects? Because they may not necessarily be the 15 companies. Issues around conflict, we need advice on, around proper advice on conflict of interest around this matter. We need to understand in depth the scale and the scope of the investigation that CIDB must embark on. I will just mention that we have been asked in different forums to say, CIDB, but Competition Commission has done everything. What investigation do you still need to do? We've also been saying ourselves, this is a clear violation of our own legislation. So what investigation? Now, these are some of the shortcomings of saying we've identified in our own legislation, because it does not say that if you receive a report from another organ of state, you base your decision on that. It doesn't say. It still says you need to investigate. Now, we need proper guidance on those things. There's also mention around the investigation of a further 22 firms. And I need to mention, and I know the Competition Commission covered this in their presentation, some of the companies in this first phase may be also implicated in the 22 firms that will still be investigated by the Competition Commission in their phase two. Now, what does it mean for CIDB processes? We also need to look at things like, if you note, we also sent an annex to our presentation that looks at the current status of some of those registration of those companies. Some of them have lapsed. They have not renewed for years. Now, the question is, what do we do as the CIDB? Because we are acting on this now, and registration may have lapsed and was never renewed. And I've alluded to a number of shortcomings that we all already identified. So what I'm basically saying is, it's a very complex matter. It is a complex matter, and we need these institutional arrangements that will need to be considered going forward. We've certainly learned a whole lot of lessons from this whole process. We need to look at our institutional arrangements going forward and make sure that we are not tested or questioned in how we are composed, be it in terms of oversight and all of those things. There's also shortcomings with our legislation. There are contradictory statements in our own regulations that we need to then use on these very same companies. So there's a number of controversial issues that we need to consider. And all that we plead with is understanding that there is process to be followed, and we need to ensure that we observe all processes to the T so that we are not found wanting at some point of our own processes. So that's basically, I think, in a nutshell, what I'd like to cover in this presentation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, CIDB. Before engaging with the presentations, I would like Department DG, can you come in before engaging with the two presentations? What is your intake on this issue?
I think in providing some comment and updating the committee, I have no written presentation. I'll make it verbally. I think I'll reflect on the processes already undertaken and a few issues that we've noted that require policy intervention going forward. The first one is that we have, since this matter has been in public, engaged with CIDB on a number of occasions, in fact with the Competition Commission since the beginning of this year. As well, I think the issue of partnering on training our procurement and officials' environment and improving the internal control systems within the organization are matters that we're handling with them in order to deal with all these matters of anti-competitiveness. And I think in our fraud risk register, we have flagged this issue. We know it affects us across the board, even beyond this particular sector, but the majority is in the sector, and we're engaging them on that. With regard to CIDB, we've had about two or three engagements on this matter, at board level, at official level, and at a combination of the two, the last of which is coming in the next 2 weeks, where the minister has requested that we finally deal with some of the issues, because he's keeping a watch on this from the Presidential Infrastructure Committee, and that is also seized with this because of the potential risks that this is posing with regard to work in that regard, both in terms of continuation of this practice as well as preventing it, and other attendant issues which they are at the political and strategic level are looking at. With regard to our approach to the matter, We have realized that there are systemic problems that have been there within the department itself, as well as the legislation. I think CIDB has already made reference to that. We'll be engaging with CIDB on a number of those. They include understanding that in the manner and practice in which we have dealt with the issue of governance within the CIDB from a departmental perspective, there are problems. Problems with regard to the appointment, constitution of the board itself to oversee these kinds of things, and therefore the ability to play the role of protecting the public against some of these misdemeanors that have been referred to in the court. Secondly, I think generally as part of our turnaround approach, we've also identified a systemic weakness within the department itself, which we need to strengthen, and we will be strengthening as part of rebuilding public works, which is the substance and the extent of the effectiveness of our own oversight over our institutions, both in terms of the policy oversight as well as performance oversight. Policy oversight is giving guidance, making sure that things are being done in accordance with policy, that we then pick up all these kinds of things that are beginning to emerge now, which could have been, should be corrected proactively before they become problematic. I think those are the way we'll be dealing with those issues. We then have to deal with the issues that then emerge out of the weak governance arrangement at the appointment, at the integrity of the integrity level with regard to the institution that is expected to deal with this, recognizing that most of the players who are governing where the critical point of governing the institution itself come from the industry and the participants in the industry. And probably by design are not expected to cease to participate because they are being employed on the basis of their expertise. Now this may be conflict of interest in real terms, in that there are specific things that they are conflicted on. But then we also want to correct the issue of even potential or perceived conflict of interest issues from a governance perspective. And I think because of the sophistication of this thing, we have undertaken with the department and I think led by the minister, that we want to assist the CIDP in performing this and oversee the process. We recognize that we may have to deal with this issue in an extraordinary manner, given after we've done a full assessment of the extent of the potential, real or perceived conflict of interest that may arise, so that whatever processes they engage in may never be found to have been flawed. The third level is at a general government level, there is a process of ensuring that interventions and response of government is coordinated, unless it's not riddled with internal conflicts and contradictions within itself. Intergovernmental structures have been set up. The Department of Economic Development is coordinating that at an official level, probably to respond to the Interministerial Committee that looks at infrastructure, to then look at what departments are affected by this, what plans do they have, and that includes institutions and those departments. What plans have they got? What approaches are they going to use? What have they done to date? Then, so that then all of that is captured and consolidated in order to ensure that the response by government is appropriate and is not also self-treating in the process. I think that is where the process is chair with regard to government. I think with regard to the issue of inherent conflict of interest within this, you will recall that the development of the regulations would have been done by people who by looking at the custodianship of the institution, are also players of the other part of the transaction. I think Competitions Commission might be feeling very bad about this one, but that's the extent of the problem. Some of the people who might be chief executive officers presently and on the other side are also previous board members or may have been at the same time being both heads and may have been party to motivating the policy that resulted in the legislation and regulations we're seeing that are effectively useless with regard to dealing with the extent of particularly from a punitive action perspective. I'm actually surprised after learning today that there are some of them who are effectively deregistered. And in fact, you may find that you can interpret that as somebody who says, if you want to impose a sanction of deregistration, I'm already out. So what can you do in that regard? And I think that's some of the things that we really are going to have to look at very quickly and seriously with regard to the policy and in the coming and direction of the committee, this side of the term and the other side of the term, we're going to have to approve to put the policy approaches that then seek to close all these gaps that have been identified. And that's the comment of the department.
Thank you, DG. Do you have anything to say?
Very busy, and I go on a bit long. Thank you, Chair. Just to make a few other, and thanks to the GD, but also to the two excellent reports, both from the Competition Commission and from the CIDB. I just want to step back a little bit and look at the broader politics of what we're talking about. First of all, the sheer scale we're dealing with. I mean, the fines are 1.46 billion, okay, and that's the tip of an iceberg. of a deep-seated problem. I think it's important because often corruption and collusion is obviously part of corruption, is attributed only to the public sector, forgetting the massive challenges of corruption that we have in parts of the private sector. And what is more, that this corruption has been exposed not particularly by the media or independent, but by a public entity in the case of the Competition Commission. So I just want to hold on to that. You know, this committee is used to concerns around corruption in the Department of Public Works, appropriately so. But, you know, we really are, and we must be pointed out, and obviously we must deal remorselessly with corruption in the public sector, but we really are tiny players. That doesn't excuse it, but just to note that reality. I think the other interesting slide which the CIDD presented, which was just briefly checked over, was slide 9. Because I think as South Africans we also become depressed. And I'm not talking narrowly as deputy minister or member of this or that political party, but as South Africans we become depressed about the challenges that we do have of corruption, and we mustn't be denialist about them. But that slide 9 is very interesting, the CIDD presentation. It talks about the Netherlands, UK, and other places where the scale of, or the revealed scale of corruption in the construction sector is much, much, much greater, at least what's been revealed there, than here. And then have a look at the very last bullet point, Hong Kong. A court in Hong Kong found that collusive behavior was not illegal, was fine, was acceptable. Quite interesting. Okay. Here in South Africa, we take it seriously. So, I mean, hat off to Competition Commission, but to all of us as South Africans. I think that's what the DG has just talked about, and also what has been flagged by the CIDD towards the end of its presentation is, I think, first of all, I think we must all be appreciative of the fact that the CIDD needed to await the process. So I think there's been an anxiety from this committee, what does the CIDB doing? But we could compromise the process if we were getting tangled up in it, and I think it's appropriate that there was a degree of waiting. But I think what the acting CEO was asking us is, but okay, now what do we do? What is the CIDB doing which is different from or additional to or whatever? I think the key thing is that we must remember that what the Competition Commission appropriately was looking at is how collusion has impacted on price escalation, basically, both for private sectors, but especially for the public sector. Massive, massive, massive overcharging of us taxpayers, all of us, as a result of this collusion. I think the CIDB's niches, we must remember that collusion also has other impacts. And I think, you know, the D in the CIDB is important. And when we relook at mandates and legislation and so forth, I think that we need to help the CIDB understand, insofar as I'm sure it does understand, but collusion also strangles the development, precisely, of industries and construction. To have a diverse, diverse, vibrant, corruption-free sector. Collusion often strangles the development of new players, and the diversity of the sector. And I think that's the particular space into which both, if we look at what we, so yes, maybe you go back behind the 2006 prescription deadline, but not so much in order to find out that there was more collusion, and to work out how much that cost the public sector. I mean, I think that would be of interest, but it's more to look at the impact that the collusive behavior has on the nature of this critical sector for things. So, just to make inspired by, I think, two excellent reports that we got, and inspiring ones, that I just wanted to make a sort of slightly more, less technical, but more political thought about how we position ourselves at DPW, working closely with CIDB, and thanking the Competition Commission for the work that it's done.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. We now engage with the presentation. Honourable Dreyer, Honourable Nyamavila, Honourable November, Honourable Stole, Honourable Gayla, Honourable Ngungane, and Honourable Ngoni. And then, Omjabi. Yeah, okay.
Can I start then? Okay. Yes, Madam Chair, I've got two questions. They both focus on the issue of the fines. Now, there was a decision to fast-track the process, whereby companies also being entered basically in what is a pre-market with state. Now, there were obvious advantages to the companies involved because then they got a reduced fines. They got off with much less than they probably otherwise would have. Now, what were the advantages to the state? Why would the state, and I call it the state, it's the Competition Commission, why would they enter into a pre-bargain and then get less out of the deal or reduced functions? And then what would the, is it a calculation of what would the fines have been if there was not, if they did not enter into this kind of pre-bargain, as I call it, or the fast-tracking process? And companies who were not successful in bidding the solution, did they also pay fines? Were they also punished, although they weren't successful? That's the one question. The other one, those penalties, the penalties that have been paid, where does this money go to? Does it go into the fiscus? Or where does it go to, and does it come to disappear to black hole, if I can call it that? And have you considered that maybe companies, instead of paying a fine, should have been asked now to build infrastructure for the value of the, what they have been fined? For example, schools, so many new schools, so many new clinics, new prison, even whatever the need was, instead of paying the money, rather get us provide some concrete results from that, like some or other infrastructure. Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for the question. Chair, the presentation that I was having didn't have slide 16. I don't know what is the situation with other members. The issue of the legal advisor. You know that the CIDB was operating without the legal advisor. It's a concern. Number two, why the CIDB take so long to appoint the investigating officer and the committee? Because really, when looking at the report, it reflects that if CIDB, you know, is reactive rather than being proactive. Because now, you know, what I wanted to check initially was that what is the role of the CIDB after this report? Although the CEO has indicated that, you know, the regulations are silent about that, but you just ask yourself, you know, why are they allowing these big companies, you know, to misuse public purse? Because the CEO of CIDB indicated that what has been done is part of their responsibility. Then do they have capacity really to deal with such, if the Competition Commission was not there investigating among it, such a report? What is it that you were using? Because you indicated that you didn't have the anti-corruption module. Which systems were put in place to make sure that you deal with such a situation? Because it seems as if now you have developed a new plan based on the findings of the Competition Commission, then start to develop a plan. How are you going to deal with all those issues as if CIDB is a new entity? You know? Then, and also, what plans are you putting in place to make sure that the gaps that you've identified in the regulations, you know, are being placed? Thanks, Joe.
Thanks. In November. Thank you, Madam President. And just one, I think Honorable Wenya Mabila has alluded to the others. Mine is on capacity really. Does the CIDB have this capacity? In the Competition Commission on page 14, there was mention about 1,200 people that are officials that are trained on procurement, 266 from the public website, and the others is from the municipalities and the other departments. But my worry, as Honorable Mbuli would say, my small worry is that are all the municipalities covered, especially those smaller ones, because it's actually there that Thank you, Tabitha.
Thank you, Honorable Tolle.
Thank you, Chairperson. First of all, Chairperson, I thank the presentation, both of them, because it helped us to understand the crisis that are facing. But my question is, what I do find that, first of all, the reason why this the Group 5 construction ID and power construction refused to take it. Sometimes the very reason for that. And what other Chairperson, I want to find out from the CIDP, what are they going to investigate? Because are they going to investigate the violation of their regulations or their procedures? Because if you check the commission reports, it reveals all what's supposed to be investigated. And the last Chairperson, I think that we're supposed to have another report, Chairperson, after this, which has been recorded, that is consolidated, both of the two reports. The report from the CIDP and the report from the commission. So that we must have a one report from both of them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Gill. Are you not ready?
No, I can. Let me take up my... no, one is to say the two presenters. It's a very good report. And also for the team, thank you as well, Deputy Minister. You're so right. The impact on the solar development of contractors. You know, but before that, also the manner which CIDP is doing this. One is happy about that. But one would like to get some time frames when you've appointed the officer. What is the time frame that you are going to take? And also agreeing with the DT that the policies of CIDP, some of them we need to look at them. You know, your policies, they deal so harshly with the emerging sector. Very, very, they're very brutal when they deal with the emerging sector. And one would like to see how are you going to deal now with the established laws. And there are two types of laws. Deputy Minister, when you deal, when the policies, when they deal with the emerging sector, they downgrade them from grade 6 to grade 1. Brutal. That's true. You go down there. That's why you have so many others in grade 1. And one would like to see how are you going to deal with these contractors. Because you deal very brutally with our people. Very brutal. So one would like to see what will happen to these here. That's why today we have a whole lot of our people who can't even assess as a project. Because of this collision. And we'll be talking about this collision. One deputy minister feels if it is possible financially, they don't need to go backwards. Remember, the person talked about Kimberley Prison. Mm-hmm. That was tendered for, the first tender was about 390 million. Escalated 1.2 billion. That's taxpayers' money.
And when I say go well outside, yeah, it's a
That's taxpayers' money. That's our money, that's taxpayers' money that has been misused. So, dear Deputy Minister, we'd also like to see what happens with the consultants, because it takes 3 to 10, as you said, that were involved in this project. This is deep. There are consultants who are involved, who approved these projects, knowing that they are over the estimate. Let us be fair, let us be open. The consultants knew that these are over the estimate. They knew the planned hire was double the amount that it was supposed to charge. There are rates out there for planned hire. But they allow this to happen. Kickbacks. It's the truth of the matter. We want to tell the commission, the competition commission, that has done this wonderful work here. We've been talking about this for years and years and years and years, that there is a problem there. Our people cannot get out of that bottom. They've been kept there, the emerging sector. They cannot move Deputy Minister from the bottom. They've been kept there. They must not. They must stay there. So one would really, we're happy with your presentation, but we want to see, and we want time frames. That's what we need from Sadi, time frames. How long will it take for this investigation? It must not be investigated for years and years, Deputy Minister. But we thank you. Also thank you for your input, Deputy Minister, and the TJ. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable
Ngwane. Thank you, Chairperson. My first question or comment is around the projects that these companies are implicated in. They are up to the value of about 26 billion, and now the penalty is about 1.47 billion. And then it is really a concern. Because when they did this, they were milking the government dry, deliberately so. Secondly, it's about the comment about these big companies, Group 9, Level 9, they account for more than 45% in the country, in construction industry. And we've got these big projects that are coming with the NDP. So what is Plan B of the IDB? Also on the issue of or the appointment of the investigating officer, by when? Because if you don't have the deadline, it will be an ongoing process until we forget about it. The fact that these big companies, they were referenced and players at the same time, it is a real concern. Because some of them were members of the CBTV board. So how do you do that? Of course, it was for good reasons, but when it was formulated, but now it has proven beyond doubt that it really didn't work. And my last question is about the construction companies on page 12 that refused to settle. What's going to happen? Regarding the comment from my colleague here, that there's been lack of transformation within the CIDP. It shows now that these companies were really doing a down as the government, because there's been no transformation at a lower level. Those small companies, emerging companies, remained there until they decided to go out of the construction industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Tata Ngoni.
Thank you. My question would be basically one citizen, which says that actually thanking the Competition Commission with the presentation and the CIDP. To me, you know, I tend to believe that there is somewhere where we're going now. There is a direction. You know, the presentation leaves so much to be desired. Especially if you talk transformation. If you analyze the damage that has been caused, how much does it affect a transformational agenda that this government has put into place? How much does it affect if you do a little analysis? It worries, I think, many of us that is our emerging contractors, like my colleague just said, will remain down there because of this collusive and then anti-competitive, anti-competitiveness behavior of these big guys. Just a small one, Chairperson, that when I was with the EWP, we were told that we are going to make you as big as Marian Robert. Chairperson, up to so far, I've not seen even one person who has gone there, let alone to be at the grade number 5. They're still down there trying to make ends meet. That's
Madam Chair, I most of the things was asked already or said. There's actually a few more. In the report of the Competition Commission, they just recognized certain sectors which was engaged, and in the report where all the projects which was investigated, other sectors was also involved or was also clients of the projects like City of Johannesburg, Swane or Pretoria. Or is it just a matter that they didn't mention all the names of the different entities? I do understand that in the report of the Competition Commission, the end of their investigation is in a time frame. But is the CIDB going to deal further with those, like the construction of the Kimby prison and other projects? Are they going to look further in that? Can we see that some of the personnel of the big companies which was involved in this collusion and those sort of things who are no more with the companies but in other positions still in our country, that they can be held liable or even get into court? As the Deputy Minister said, it's actually problematic that a company, when his registration lapsed, he didn't register again. That's the problem. Does it mean that he's no more going to get any big contracts in our country? What is the case? I'll hold with that, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Masawidan. Can I request CIDB and the Competition Commission to respond? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Madam Chair. From the Competition Commission, I mean, we will deal with the questions that were directed, obviously. And then one of those was, I mean, why would the CC, the Competition Commission, enter into this kind of process, which you call the construction fast track process?
I'm sorry, there's a request that we break for 5 minutes. Can you do otherwise? Okay. You can take energy upside tea, there's sugar there, you put a lot of energy. Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for getting me. I'm sorry to disturb your phoning program. I don't know whether you were tweeting or what exactly.
Madam Chair. Thank you very much, Madam Chair. The Honourable Member asked, I mean, why would the Competition Commission enter, you know, into a process like this? Madam Chair, the Competition Commission did, consider, you know, this whole process before embarking on it. As we indicated before that, we even did benchmarking exercises. Now, Madam Chair, in that process, we found that it would have cost, Madam Chair, the Competition Commission about, you know, approximately 54 million to actually investigate each project with regards to this particular project. And therefore, having done that cost-benefit analysis, you know, that then informed the commission taking a decision to follow this fast-track process. One of the considerations that we made, Madam Chair, was the scenario where in these cases would actually then go on appeal, for an example. And when we did our sums, we found that that would have added another, you know, an additional, you know, 1.5 million in terms of cost, you know, if they go on appeal. So when we looked at that, we saw that the process, the best process to take is to follow this construction fast-track process. And this process, Madam Chair, has had its own advantages in that currently, I mean, clients now have an opportunity to claim civil damages, and also, I mean, as the CIBG, as the SDV has indicated, it has also opened up processes, basically, for them going forward to take the requisite action, Madam Chair. For the Competition Commission, Madam Chair, I mean, this process was basically about deterrence, Madam Chair. It was about making the market, basically, Madam Chair, more competitive. And it was, of course, I mean, partly, you know, about, you know, imposing the administrative penalties, Madam Chair, as prescribed by the Competition Act. Now, that's then, Madam Chair, what informs, basically, in a nutshell, why the Competition Commission chose this construction fast-track settlement, rather than, Madam Chair, investigating each case. And also, Madam Chair, the other issue of consideration was the issue of time, because in terms of our experience as a Competition Commission, it takes 1 to 2 years just to investigate one a project, Madam Chair. Now here you have a situation, you have 300 projects, and you know, the reality is that it would have taken far longer in terms of time, Madam Chair, to investigate these cases as compared to the process that the Competition Commission has followed, Madam Chair. Those are the factors that contributed to us choosing this part of the construction fast track, Madam Chair. The other question of the Honourable Member was, with regards to where did, I mean, the fines go. The act, Madam Chair, is very prescriptive with regards to what the Competition Commission does with the administrative penalties. And therefore, I mean, Section 59, I mean, provides that we must pay over the fine to the National Treasury. In a nutshell, Madam Chair, the money goes to the National Fiscal. It does not come to the Competition Commission. The Honourable Member further asked us, I mean, why not ask, Madam Chair, these firms to build schools? I have already indicated that the Act is prescriptive, Madam Chair, in terms of what we do with regards to administrative penalties. The Act says that the Competition Commission has got powers to impose administrative penalties of up to 10% of a firm's annual turnover for the previous year. So, therefore, if the Commission you know, engages then in other processes other than those mentioned, there is a risk that the Commission, I mean, will be acting, you know, Madam Chair, meaning therefore that we would be acting outside the scope of authority of the Competition Commission, because we will not have the requisite powers to do so. Honourable Members, may remember that the Commission precisely to respond to this question, Madam Chair, tried its settlement agreement with Pioneer. Honourable Members may recall that the Commission there proposed that we establish a competition fund, which part of the administrative penalty, so we proposed that it goes to the IDC. But the Deputy Minister will recall very well that we got a stick on our head for doing that. And then we had to go back to line. We had to draw the line, basically. So that is a demonstration, Madam Chair, that, you know, that the Commission, you know, has not tried to be innovative around this question. But, you know, the Act is very prescriptive. We can do what the law allows us to do, Madam Chair. The other question then, Madam Chair, whether, I mean, all the municipalities have been covered with regards to training by the Competition Commission. Madam Chair, that process is not complete, but our approach has been to start with the metros, the bigger metros, and then cascade it to your district municipalities. And in that process, Madam Chair, we are only we have covered much of the of these municipalities. We are only left with Polokwane and the Northern Cape. That is Sol Plaatje. But we have, as a commission, I mean, tried to reach out to the municipalities as much as possible, Madam Chair. I mean, we have been to places like Mangaung in Bloemfontein, also to engage around the issue. In KwaZulu-Natal as well, Madam Chair, we have already been there. The interesting part about that, Madam Chair, is that, I mean, the results of this awareness raising have already started to tell, in that the commission has already, I mean, started to receive complaints from municipalities, you know, complaining about corrupt tendering. And there are cases that we have already investigated as a commission, where indeed we found that there has been this anti-competitive conduct, but at local government level. And therefore, that sent a message to us that what we are trying to do in raising that awareness has paid dividends, Madam Chair, because now officials are able to detect, I mean, these tenders, Madam Chair. At national level, we also already have big cases that we have already investigated, Madam Chair, from the animal feed sector, and also from the HIV test kit case that we already investigated and prosecuted successfully, Madam Chair, which came from the National Treasury, and they reported to the Competition Commission. At local government, we also received, like I said, I mean, complaints from the East Becas Coast Municipality. Very interesting for us. We were able to investigate the cases and found that, in fact, there has been, Madam Chair, collusive tendering. So it's very promising for us in that, sense, Madam Chair. The other question then that was asked by JP, Madam Chair, with regard to certain sectors and why not the others. I will share that one with a colleague, Oliver.
Thanks, Madam Chair. If I understand the question correctly, I think the question was around in the presentation itself that we didn't mention the names of all the clients. I want to remember is correct. We did mention the names of all the clients because it's quite an exhaustive list. What I can say is that there were clients both in the public sector and the private sector. And in the public sector, in particular, it included clients in government departments, municipalities, SOEs as well. So it was across, the government sector.
Those are the questions that were directed at the Competition Commission.
Thank you very much. Any follow-up questions?
Thank you, Chairperson. I didn't hear about the settlement.
Can you please repeat your question?
Chairperson, I want to understand why these three companies fail to settle it or refuse.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'll answer this question. I'll take each firm separately because the reasons are slightly different. In the case of power construction, they basically challenged the commission's interpretation of the prescription rule, and that was the reason why they didn't want to settle. And construction IE was also very similar, also challenging the commission's prescription rule. In those two cases, the commission is going to prosecute of those two firms. But in both those firms, it is just one contravention for each firm. So it's not a numerous contravention. In the case of Group 5, Group 5 had four projects, undisclosed projects,
that they also didn't want to settle as well. They were challenging two things. One is the evidence, and the other was also the prescription rule as well. But currently, as it stands, Group 5 still wants to pursue a possible settlement with the Commission, but it will not be under the same terms and conditions of the Fast Track. The Fast Track was lenient, where we would have penalized all the contraventions in one basket. Now the Commission will look at penalizing each contravention separately. So one would imagine that the penalty would be much higher now than it would have been in the Fast Track.
Thank you, CIDB. I think it's your turn to respond. And you remember when we were here to present your strategic plan and your APPs, the committee asked you a question to say, how are you going to deal with the trend of collusion, especially when the engineers and consultants are involved? To say, how are you going to deal with it? And Ubra Gayla tried to make a follow-up, of course, back then, to say they are also involved. How are we going to deal with it? Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first one that I'll deal with is around the issue of the CIDB seeking legal advice and the concern that CIDB does not have a legal advisor. I just need to mention that the task team that was appointed by the board to actually discuss the matters around the collusion in the sector was one of the recommendations that they made to the board is and acceptance that the task team had to deal with is the fact that it's the first time in the history of this country that we are having to deal with a matter of this magnitude in the construction sector. Now, that also means that as a CIDB, it's the first time we are dealing with such a case. Now, we needed to trade carefully, and hence then the recommendation to say we need strong legal advice that will make sure that we do not falter in terms of how we then apply our regulations and guide us through the process. When I was identifying some of the things that are silent in the regulations, I made an example to say, for instance, it talks about CIDB being aware that there is contravention with the code and then instituting the necessary processes and all of that. Now, it also mentions that if there is another organ of state, you let those processes run their term, and then once they are done, the CIDB takes over. But it does not say, if you receive a report from another organ of state, this is what you will do specifically. It just says you will then institute your own processes. Now, it's just one of the things that I'm saying, and that are being raised, and I think they've raised even here to say, so what is it that we will be investigating? So this legal advice is specifically and especially for the matter on the construction cartel, and not necessarily to say that CIDB does not have access to legal advice when we need it. There's also concern around the appointment of the officer as well as the committee. Why so long? First, I need to mention that as it is stated in the regulations that there would be investigations when such matters come forward or whatever, or any other contravention with our laws and all of that. Now, what I need to mention is that the CIDB does appoint investigative officers and committees on a 3-year term. That tenure then takes place every 3 years. In this case, the current service providers that we have as investigative officers, their contract expired end of August this year. Now, the question was then to say, if we had this kind of reports as at the end of July from the Competition Commission, do we then give the current service provider to start with the process, bearing in mind that in August their contract would have expired? And we all know that the processes that's going to be, it's going to take time. considering the nature of this thing. And we consider the fact that by the time probably they will be ready to then present their findings and getting whatever additional information that they would need, either from the Competition Commission or from other sources, their contracts would have expired. Now, the decision then was to say, parallel, let us extend the current contract for them to finalize the current cases that they are dealing with, because we do have other cases that we are looking at from time to time, not necessarily around the construction cartel, but around other procurement issues that get raised with the CIDB and the CIDB investigates. Now, that meant we needed to then start the process of appointing new legal officers and as well as a new a new committee that will also then focus on issues that the CIDB needs to investigate, and perhaps even the issue around the construction cartel. Why I'm saying perhaps even the issue is, one of the reasons why we said we needed to consider having a legal advisor specifically for the construction cartel matter was to advise on process, and also given the scale and the scope of the matter that we are having to deal with. And that advisory on the process will obviously look at all other issues pertaining to the whole investigation and how it should be done and all of those things, considering the kind of information that we have at our disposal. Does the CIDB have the capacity to actually deal with this matter? I would safely say, as CIDB, I would know we will not have capacity to deal with this matter on our own. Hence, we are working closely with the department to assist us. Hence, we need to appoint legal advisors that will assist us as CIDB. In our procurement and delivery management unit, when we deal with these cases, we receive them, we look at the cases, and if there is justification for us to investigate based on whether the matter being raised is a matter that we are mandated to deal with, we then submit those cases to our investigative officers, as I mentioned, that we appoint on a three-year terms. What are CIDB plans to address the issues around the regulation gaps? I think the DG made some mention around the fact that the department, obviously, is one of the things that they will be looking at from a policy point of view in terms of how do we address the gaps that have been identified, because we need to make sure that those are addressed. And it was mentioned that the same legislation would have been when it was developed, some of the people that would have been involved in the development of the legislation that led to the promulgation of and the establishment of the CIDB are some of the ex-CEOs of the same companies that we have to deal with. Now, we need that from a policy point of view, then that's going to be dealt with, and there are plans in place even from the department point of view. Next, the issue around what kind of investigation will be done by the CIDB. This is what I alluded to earlier, to say it's part of the things that we will obviously be engaging the legal advisor on. But this is what I need to mention. And the Competition Commission, I think, covered it adequately in their presentation to give us their approach and mandate and what exactly they focus on. Now, theirs is to look at anti-competitive practices and behaviors in any industry that lead, obviously, in high prices and all of those things. Now, as the CIDB, ours is not limited to that only. There have been questions around the fact that what about the professionals and other people? I mean, I could make an example. I don't know. Like, what if there are even government officials that would have worked with these same contractors? We don't know. But our investigation, I would assume, would also look at a holistic impact and process of what has happened with this whole cartel.
if we as a regulator say we provide the risk management tool, now this risk management tool, we have what is called iTender. iTender says, as a client department, when you have a construction tender that you need to advertise, you need to advertise the tender on the iTender system or on the registration system register the tender on the CIDB system, the iTender system. Now, immediately, it means the CIDB will know upfront that there is a tender in a particular department, in a particular province, and all of those things. And it gives you guidelines in terms of when you award, you must also update the CIDB that you've awarded, and this is the amount that you've awarded for, and the different stages. Even at the completion of that particular project, you need to advise the CIDB and register on the CIDB, on the register of projects, to say this contract has now been finalized and this is how much it costs. Now, had we not have some of the current concerns and shortcomings around compliance with our own registers of projects by some of the client departments, we would probably be in a different position where we would have been able to identify long before these things happened, or maybe at the end stages of this cartel, to say no. But if this particular project had been registered for 100,000, why at completion stage was it now 1 billion? And now those are some of the issues that we are currently having and dealing with as the CIDB around compliance with our own prescripts by the different government departments or municipalities and so forth. Now, the other issue that was then raised was around the issue of the time frames of the appointment of the officer or the committee. I think on the last slide of the presentation, we covered the fact that we obviously need to also observe the Treasury FCM framework in terms of observing the different bid committees that these terms of reference needed to go to and all of that. And what we have is the fact that it is going to be advertised in the state tender bulletin, and in the state tender bulletin you first place notice the one Friday and the following Friday then advertise the tender, which means we place notice, now we're going to advertise the tender and we will also take it to the paper, and then the bid will then close a month after. Because again, in terms of the SEM framework, which we need to observe, is that the tender needs to be in the media for at least 21 days before you close the tender, to give tender sufficient time for them to tender. We also need to mention, because I think it is important to also mention that even with the acquisition of the legal advisor, it is worth mentioning the fact that a lot of the legal people that could be considered or they could tender with the CIDB are already conflicted, as they are working or they have been working with the companies that have defined by the Competition Commission. And the other reason why we needed to consider specifically the issue of legal advice is we cannot underestimate the kind of the magnitude of this case. The Competition Commission also shared with us the fact that some of these companies would come and are presented by a number of senior counsels. Now, the CIDB cannot then underestimate the kind of exposure that will be having when we deal with this matter and we deal with the specific companies that have been fined that the CIDB will need to deal with. Issues around CIDB policies being harsh and brutal on the emerging sector, what I need to mention there, it is not a question, the fact that collusion in its nature is exclusionary. The emerging sector has been excluded, It was the same fact I was raised even last year when the Minister of Public Works hosted the Transformation Summit. And the attendees in this summit, they did raise the fact that collusion is problematic. In fact, it is also restricting new entrants into the industry because they look at this and they say, but the people that are already in the industry are not progressing. They're thinking we have a serious issue in the sense that in terms of our register, the grades, it's saturated at the lower levels. That is a fact. And it is no question to say that the same practices have contributed to that situation. If we look at, for instance, the fact that we have probably 37 companies in grade 9 or in general buildings, and out of those, maybe 10 have been colluding, and in terms of the findings of the Competition Commission, what about the other ones? And it means these people have acted and behaved in a manner that made sure that other people were excluded from competing. That is a fact. Now, CIDB, obviously, as I say, that the minister hosted the transformation, but it's things that we started looking at to say, how do we deal with the issues that we are faced with? And that basically talks to what the question that was asked to say, what is the plan B of CIDB if we are talking about the fact that this issue around the 45% that was mentioned in the presentation? I just need to unpack that a bit. That was focusing on an observation purely during the period 2011. And the 45% is only for projects that were above 100 million per project. And those projects, 45% of them were done by the big companies. That's your grade 8s and your grade 9s. The issues around the fact that historically, we had represent players. If you look at the landscape of the CIDB and the fact that some of the ex-CEOs and the ex-chairmen of some of these companies that have been fined were actually board members or even in certain instances chairpersons of the CIDB is something that even the DG alluded to say those are the institutional arrangements that the department and in their oversight would also look at going forward. There is lack of transformation in the industry. That is not questionable. And such practices like what we are dealing here today have contributed to the lack of transformation. The issue around the CIDB and the impact on the emerging sector, I think I've covered that because it is by no doubt has had a very negative impact on the emerging sector. And around lastly, the question on what further is the CIDB, what are the further issues that the CIDB is going to look at? I've also touched on the fact that ours is beyond just looking at anti-competitive behaviors. There would be consultants that were working with those companies. There would be various other advisors that they would have worked with that would have assisted them with their glove quantities, with their costings and all of those things. And those the Competition Commission did not look at. Now, again, in the CIDB, it's one of the things that is also not there, the register of professionals. But it's something that we have already started discussing to say, how do we as a regulator also look at the register of professionals going forward? And it's something that we've already started a couple of years ago in discussing and looking at how do we then come on board in dealing with those issues. The lacking of registration for some of these companies, the fact that they don't have any projects beyond whatever year that their registration would have lapsed with the CIDB, those are some of the things we're saying from a legal point of view. Those are some of the things that we'll be looking at in terms of advice. But I also need to mention, some of these companies, they may not have renewed their membership, but they may have subsidiaries
they subsequently registered. So those are all the things, because a lot of them have subsidiaries, and I think we did provide in terms of that annexure. So those are all of the things that we will need to unpack as we start our own processes with the advice that we get and the kind of the scope and the scale of the investigation that we will engage to as a department. Now, Madam Chair, to a degree, it also then touches on the issue that you raised when we presented our APP in April around the trend on collusion. There is no doubt that the companies did not work alone and will not work alone to collude in this session. So hence I'm saying the CIDB, one of the things that we are currently looking at is around also the issue of the register of professionals, and not just the contractors and the projects only, but the professionals themselves. Thank you.
Madam Chair, just to add on to... Sorry. Yes. Just add and take where this agency CEO has left off. I think part of the reasoning also behind getting experienced legal advisors is to ensure that when we look at these cases at the CIDB, we would explore looking at the whole project teams that would involve the contractors and whoever was working with them. So we need then to look at how we approach that with legal advice. And even though we don't have the register of professionals in place yet, but as you indicated earlier, these contractors were not working alone and on their own. They worked with various consultants in various areas of engineering and the environment professions. So we would be looking at that. But also just to emphasize broadly that when we talked about the investigating officers also and the investigating committees, we're illustrating that as part of the CIDB's normal day-to-day processes to follow up on infringements of this code. And this is what the Honourable Member, Mr. Gaylor, also alluded to when he said that we'll follow up smaller contractors to the end until they are deregistered. But then when he asked again, how are we going then to tackle these ones, these big ones, we'll ensure that the process is transparent, is fair, and everybody is given the opportunity to make their presentation. But again, we will make sure that we adhere to our processes as mandated in terms of the law. But also we were asked why we were allowing big companies to collude. We haven't really allowed them. You know, by its very nature, collusion and price fixing is very secretive. And in this case, I would again like to commend the Competition Commission for its work, because it opened this door. It allowed South Africa and us, even in the industry, even though we were aware of these processes, it allowed us to have the proof so that then we can piggyback on these processes with broader intergovernmental institutional arrangements, because as indicated earlier, as South Africa, as CIDB, we won't have capacity on our own. But we want to make sure that the processes that we engage do not duplicate effort or use and waste limited resources, but that we have a coherent process to deal with this. We were also asked by one member what we had in place before the processes that now we propagate that we're going to put in place. The division in procurement and balancing or delivery management had various models or processes where they were engaging with client departments at various scales or levels of government. Some of it, for example, was doing the audit blitz. We found that various departments and municipalities do not really comply with CIDB precepts. So we're putting in place mechanisms to educate clients more, but also to tighten these processes to ensure that there is more compliance and work, you know, in collective together. And again, I would go back then to the comments made by the DG, because it's going to help us all when we work together on this process to ensure that going forward, there is more coherent engagement. and working together with various client departments. When the new board, for example, came in, we also even recognized that even though the CIDD is a regulator, it didn't have adequate capacity to follow up on its own processes and regulations. And that points to the limitations of our structures, because you had, again, referees and players on the same structure of the CIDP. Hence, again, Madam Chair, I would like to point to what the DG had indicated, that the Department of Public Works is going to look again at these boards, how they are promulgated, how they are constituted, and what it is that they are supposed to do to ensure that we tighten up processes going forward. And just to finalize this, Madam Chair, I think this process with the Competition Commission is opening and allowing us the scope to ensure that there will be equitable development in the construction industry. I think before, members have complained, even in this committee, why smaller contractors are not growing, and this was mentioned also by another member. But now we know why tenders were going to the same companies. And I think we need to have here open minds about this whole process and know that for us as the construction industry to grow, for the plant to grow, the seed must die. And this is what we need to look at and not try to stymie this process going forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good. Honourable Gila, I'm sorry, I ended up.
No. Mr. Tolan, give me a call. Chairperson, I just wanted to make a suggestion. It is quite true that there are gaps in the CIDP regulations. And the DG is right that those same people who are involved in this corruption formulated those policies. Luckily, when CIB was started, I was informed I was a deputy president of NACOM. But the process was then hijacked. I remember the minister that was the late Mrs. Tao, and Sipochezi was a DG. So, in order to solve this, I want to make a suggestion. Because if you look at this gas, for instance, the grade 9 can tender for any contract right up to the grade 1. But the grade 1 cannot tender for contracts at a grade 9 level. Also, in the United States, there are so many requirements placed on the emerging sector. They are not much on the service sector. So what I'm then suggesting to you is that we request the DG to call a stakeholder in Durban to talk about these applications. And that must be done at least by December. It must be pioneered by the department so that these regulations can be reviewed, or else we'll be talking the same thing for the next 10 years. The problem is within those regulations, CITP. That is my proposal. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Gayla.
Sure, I agree with what Honorable Gayla is saying, because really we can't keep on crying about the challenges that are in the regulation. We need to come out with solutions, because we can't cry the same way as the emerging contractors are crying. But while they're crying, we need to hear them and see how best can we assist them. But also to say that when the CIDB gives us information, I think they must give us information with the full spoon, because if they give us information bits and pieces, then that is where we ended up asking questions, you know, that they feel those questions are not necessarily, because when looking at the issue of the investigating officers, looking at what they presented as if adverts are still going to come out by the 15th of September, instead of indicating that the investigating officers are existing, their term is expiring on this date, then here's the plan that we're putting in place. So when they give us information, we request that the information must be informed so that we understand it correctly.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. Honourable Member, there are no follow-ups. Deputy Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think this has been a very, certainly for me, but I expect for all of us,
a very useful session. I just want to make a few, again, sort of general points. I mean, the first thing is, as we deal with the collision issues and work out what is the array, what is the suite of punitive and other measures that we can undertake, of course, there'll be a big outcry saying, we need these big players. We've got this big infrastructure build program, multi-year program, and so forth. And of course, there's a degree of truth in that. We do need significant capacity if we, as governments and as South Africa, roll out this massive, very ambitious infrastructure program that we're dealing with. So the first point I want to note is that, they've paid $1.46 billion in fines, and none of them have gone into liquidation. So it's not as though, that I'm aware of, so it's not as though one's dealing with, fighting fit, highly efficient, lean and mean and effective corporations. I'm dealing with a lot of surplus, basically, and some of it that is generated out of corrupt and collusive behavior. So just to note that. We focus mainly on what the Competition Commission has done by way of extracting fines, but obviously there's an array of other issues which as government we are looking at, and DG mentioned this, that we need to, as government across different departments and different entities, have a best as possible across different spheres of government also in different departments, have as best as possible a strategic approach rather than going off in different directions. So first of all, as government, we are strongly looking at the possibility of criminal cases against individuals. So this would be not against corporate, but against individuals. So that is certainly something that needs to be strongly looked at. So we send strong signals. So it's not just small guys that end up in prison or and so on, but bigger guys should not be immune. They say they're too big to fail. They shouldn't be too big to fail. They shouldn't be too big to jail either, if required. Then there's the whole question of civil cases. In other words, metros, for instance, that have lost lots of money. The city of Cape Town would be a good example on the stadium. Now, they're definitely actively looking at civil cases against extradition to fines that are paid. That doesn't exempt or preclude the possibility of pursuing civil cases against those who, through collusion, have cost taxpayers or ratepayers huge amounts of excess money. We should, of course, understand that, and I think this has been said by our colleagues from CIDB and particularly from the Competition Commission, that pursuing these characters in court can be time-consuming, very costly. So what you recover might actually be less than what you spend, and you might not even win the case, because our experience as government is that these big corporations have got virtually all of the big law firms in South Africa on retainer. So when we go for high end senior advocates and so forth, so when we go to senior advocates and can you help us in this particular case, we tell, well, I'd like to, but I have a conflict because I'm on a retainer for company XYZ. So we need to understand, keep very tough on collusion and corruption, but understand what we're up against and the challenges of doing that. Then I really like what the CIDD, I hadn't sort of internalized that properly before, mentioned, is that, and perhaps it's the CIDD space, is what have the companies themselves done? So some of them have now confessed to collusion and so on. Have they now implemented disciplinary measures against the individuals involved in the company, or has it just been a slap on the wrist? And what are the consequences of that? So I think that that's an important space which the Competition Commission can't really go into, but CIDB, which then deals with the registration and behavior and conduct of these companies, is important. Another really important area, which hasn't come up here, but I know the Treasury and SARS is looking at, is that these big construction companies are involved in massive tax evasion. Mm-hmm. Basically, for offshoring, among other things, offshoring their tax responsibilities. So if you look at the senior executives and so on, many of them live with, their families are located in Gulf states, for instance. They're South Africans, most of them, and they live in hotels for 3 months at a time to avoid paying tax here. And so it's not illegal what they're doing, but it's problematic. And again, should they be getting new contracts when they're avoiding, because they have the capacity, unlike Honorable Gale is emerging or submerging contractors. So that is something really, it applies to the construction sector in particular, but not just to them. These big, big monopoly companies in South Africa, there's a lot of significant, what we call offshoring of tax responsibility. And so the sort of lower end of what they do in construction, they can't avoid having warm bodies on the ground here in South Africa. But some of the design functions and so on, which are the high-cost things, they pretend, or even they are doing them in, you know, some Gulf state, or in theory at least. And so we need to look at that as well. Then I think that we, you know, this registering and non-registering and so on, yet it might be about ducking. We weren't registered at the time, or we were no longer registered at the time we were colluding, so you can't really get us. But we therefore need to make the fact that you aren't registered at the CDI really have teeth, which in fact it should have. It means that, you know, you might be historically registered as grade 9, but if you're not registered currently, then you're not grade 9. You're not any. And that we need to make that, and that of course then relates to the point that you've made, that we've really also got to give CIDB more teeth including in getting compliance from line departments and different spheres of government in registering their projects. Because as the acting CEO from CIDB said, that if we'd had compliance in terms of registering projects and what they were tended for, and then we get a sense, then we might have from our end picked up more effectively and would have had some, you know, paper trail, as it were, for some of this. So I think as we go forward, we need to look at that. So I don't want to listen to the point that Honourable Bailey, but I said that I might. You see, I mean, first of all, collusion doesn't just, big collusion occurs at the big end, but it's not necessarily that small emerging contractors are angels themselves. Mm-hmm. And so the role of CIDB is not necessarily to promote, the role of CIDB is to promote public interest in the sector and not promote emergings against emerged or submergings, which is what they typically are, against emerged necessarily. We need to be careful of that because that also quickly becomes racialized, and obviously transformation is a slippery word. Okay, so I agree that. You see, even the fact that, as you said correctly, acting CEO, that grade 1, 2, 3, and so on are like heavily populated, and then it gets smaller. But that's universally the case. And you do need small operators. And you don't necessarily want all small operators to become Murray and Roberts, or Mabanda and Kesha, or whatever you want to call them, when they emerge, if they emerge. That's one route, and good luck to them if they happen. But there's a very, very, very important role for a diversity of operators with a diversity of capacity. And the big guys must be transformed, and some of the little ones. And therefore, I think also some of the questions that I thought people were beginning to emerge around grading, and I think it was Honourable Gaylor who said, so I'm now making peace with him, and I don't think I'm making war with him earlier. The I'm sort of agreeing, but just warning, that the CID can't become the instrument of one step of sector interest, it must be public interest. And as DPW, it's our job to assist them to play that role and to be more effective ourselves as DPW. But when it comes to grading, you know, are we, for instance, when we grade mines, are we sufficiently building, what are we doing? Are we just looking at technical skills in some kind of universal way, or are we looking at technical skills and capacity for the particular developmental needs of South Africa? Are we forcing greater use of labor intensity, for instance? You know, we've got a massive unemployment problem. Now, if we grade them because they've got a lot of machinery and do things with minimal labor intensity, so our grading system needs to lean much more effectively into, if it's not, needs to lean into, so as you say, there must be a whole lot of hurdles for grade 1, 2, and 3. There must be also tough conditions for grade 9, and it can't just be that we're very big and we've got lots of money, we've got lots of machinery, for instance. I mean, all of those things are not unimportant. I'm not saying that some things can be done just with manual labor. Obviously, they can't. But we need to talk. Development is not just, or transformation is not just about promoting, you know, it's about transformation in a comprehensive sense. So I think that what the DG was saying is that with your assistance as the committee, we want to open up sooner rather than later, now a process, to change the founding legislation for CIDB is not for this committee or, you know, maybe for a DG after. But perhaps we can, even as soon as now, begin to look at regulation. Regulations can. So what space can we learn from what we've heard today and what we know from this process? How can we begin to lean into the regulations to make CIDB do what we want it to do, to be a construction industry, big D, developmental board, developmental for public interest in our country. And then finally, the last bit I want to make is that the Honourable Chateau said, they must now consolidate the two reports we've got now. The committee must let the committee produce a report on what you've heard and make strong recommendations to the executive and particularly to the DPW. You've heard things. Now, the Competition Commission is here to represent the Competition Commission. That's appropriate. That idea is here to represent the CIDB. You are here to represent South Africans in the light of what you've heard. So, you know, we certainly would look forward to recommendations coming from the committee, as DG and the Deputy Minister, and I'm sure we speak for the Minister, recommendations that you would make about how we move, not slowly, but quickly. So your point is right. But the responsibility is yours. not. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I think, Minister, we've come to the end of our meeting, but I would like to take it where you stopped to say we are representing the people of South Africa. And I'm worried because in my own thinking, media is also representing the people of South Africa. And this morning they are not here to come in. Are they in big number? In big number? Where are they? If it was the Department of Public Works, video cameras will be here to come and cover public works. But these big companies are not covered. People should know because if there's collusion, in my understanding, is that people of South Africa are the ones to suffer. Because the price of building materials will go up. And ordinary innocent people are the ones to suffer. And media should be saying ordinary people, because of these collusions, are the ones who are suffering. Cement is going up. Lentils is going. You know, these Africans are using a lot of lentils in making sure that we bury our people in a dignified way. We reduce lentils down there to put our coffins, Deputy Minister, and cement and all those things are going up. And that's why we should expose these big guns. Because they are the ones who are making South Africans to suffer. On that note, Deputy Minister, DG.
No insult to the media, quality of our workers, for our media workers. But they also work for big colluding media houses. And maybe the Competition Commission might.
But then they wouldn't know.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the end of our meeting.